I invite you to reach for the insert within your bulletin where you will find both passages that we'll be treating this morning as we continue this look at the words of Advent, the words that go along with the lighting of the unity candles, or not the unity candles, but the Advent candles. Last week we spoke about choosing hope. This week we want to wrestle with finding peace. That's the word that we all shared together as we lit the candle, and yet our world seems to be completely absent of it. There's a song, whenever I think of peace, that comes to mind for me. It's called I'm So Tired. It's from the White Album. And in 1968, John Lennon literally screams, I'd give you everything I've got for a little peace of mind. And the reason why that song comes to mind is John is writing at the height of the Beatles' popularity. He is still in his 20s. He possesses everything that you would expect leads to serenity and peace. He has plenty of money. He has plenty of fame. He has incredible power and incredible prominence. And yet he cannot find the peace he craves. And the deep disillusionment he feels is so profound that he says, I'd give you everything. Every single thing I got just for a little peace of mind. And I think that lyric resonates with many because peace, harmony, serenity, whatever you want to call it, is one of the deepest longings of the heart. We all long for it, and yet it seems so elusive, and when we have it, it seems to last for so little a time. So the question that we're confronted with is, where is peace to be found? And what's amazing about Psalm 131, the shortest psalm in our Psalter, is our psalmist has claimed to have found inner peace. And our psalmist, in finding inner peace, wants to paint a picture of that peace as a mother, as a child, resting in the tender embrace of its mother. And in telling us of this peace and how he achieved it, he's going to say that there are some things we really do have to lose, some things we have to get rid of in order that we can completely know this peace, peace with others, peace with ourself, and ultimately peace with God, which hopefully all three of those together will lead us to be peacemakers and create a changed environment in which we live. So the first thing he speaks of when he talks about finding this inner peace, he says something we wouldn't expect. Verse 1, O Lord, my heart's not lifted up. And that phrase, lifted up, is a way to picture pride, that you are excelling over others, that you are superior to others. My eyes are not raised too high. And it's his way of saying, you know, I had to renounce pride. I had to renounce it because pride and peace do not go well together. Because when you have an inflated sense of self-importance, you're automatically at odds with others. Because pride is never content with being good enough. Pride is always about being better than others. It's about being the greatest, being number one, the biggest, the best, the brightest. So that pride is constantly in comparison with others and in competition with others. And the problem of comparison and competition and demanding to always be the greatest and the best is you will eventually run into someone who's better than you, who's greater than you, that's smarter than you, that's more able than you. And thus, one leads to a place of oppression and fear and fight and all that comes with a lack of peace. So when he says he renounces pride, what we have to assume is he's taking on humility. And humility, of course, is not a degradation of self. You should know that by now. It's not saying, you know, I'm really nothing. It is to assess as best you can your abilities, your skills, and know that they're good enough. To know that there are some things I do well and I do them as best as I can, but I don't have to be the best in order to do them well. I can understand that what I do is good enough and apply that to others and offer that to others. It really is, in many senses, becoming comfortable in one's own skin. I have long since come to the resolve that I will never be the greatest preacher. But I'm good enough. I do the best I can, and I try to be comfortable in that own skin. That applies to the rest of my pastoral duties. I'm very inferior in some. I do some okay, but the fact is, I've learned to inhabit as best I can the fact that this is what God's got to work with, and I'm going to offer it to God, and not try to outdo everyone else, but to do it as best as I can, not trying to be number one, but trying to offer the best I can be. So our psalmist says, you know, you're never going to find peace if peace and pride are living in the same person, because our pride will put us in conflict with others. We will automatically be playing that comparison game. But then he goes one step further, and this is what cuts against our can-do positive attitude here in the Western world. Verse 1, the second part, I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. Which is a way of saying, I recognize my limitations. And we live in a culture that just does not want to in any way accept the idea of limits. We resist the idea of limits. We assume that given enough positive attitude, we can overcome all obstacles and there's no limits to what we can do. And you hear a lot of highfalutin talk come, but oftentimes you see that that's crushed by reality. Limitations are undeniable. They come with being human, with being a creature. If you think about it, the first temptation was, you'll have no limits. You'll be like God. Eat the forbidden fruit. The awareness that we have limitations is just walking in reality. I can't see those in the back clearly right now, because I'm limited in my sight, and the older I get, the worse it gets. I am limited as best and as much as I might want to be able to see clearly. I cannot see you clearly without the aid of my spectacles. I would love to be able to be two places at once. I'd get so much done. I'd double the impact of what I do, but I am limited to being in one space and one time. I'd love to be able to throw on a cape and fly, but they tell me that's impossible. I'd love to have a pet dragon. I would love to. I don't know who would clean up its business. I'd get my kids to do that, but I'd love to have that. There are limits. And we in the Western world do not take well to limits. We'd like to think we can solve every problem, that we can do anything we set our minds to doing. And there is an advantage in saying, I'm going to try my hardest and do my best, but there's a fantasy in thinking there aren't limitations or obstacles, that at the end of the day, as hard as you try, you're not going to end racism on your own. You're not going to end war on your own. You're not going to end sexism on your own. You can make some significant impact in your own life, in your own perspective, and what you bring to it, and maybe in your sphere of influence. But there are some things, like our psalmist said, that they're too great and too marvelous for me. And because of that, we have to, if we're going to know peace in a broken world. That we have certain limitations. There are many things we can't change. As much as we'd like to change them, they are beyond our ability to change. And there's a certain wisdom in knowing what we can and can't change. That's why I've always loved this Serenity Prayer by Reinhold Niebuhr. It has that beautiful balance of, God, grant me the grace to accept with serenity or peace the things that cannot be changed. Courage to change the things which should be changed. And of course, the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. Because we have limitations. There are things beyond our capacity to change. And so our psalmist says, in order to learn peace, I had to renounce pride, which put me in conflict with others. I had to accept my limitations, which put me at conflict with my own limited self and my creatureliness. And I had to do one more thing. And in verse 2, you find it. I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. And when you first read that, you might think, boy, that's such a beautiful, serene picture. A weaned child with its mother. But the fact is, that picture is a picture of the calm after the storm. Because we all know that weaning is not an easy process. It comes after long periods of screaming, crying, kicking, fighting. Because all of a sudden, that comfort that mother once gave is taken away. And one must learn that one is in a relationship with mother, and mother is not just a milk machine. Mother is not just there to meet our every need, that instead we are in a relationship with mother, and in being in that relationship, we often are not going to get everything when we want it in the way we want it. So that the best word I can think of to speak of this thing that the psalmist says is, he finally, like any weaned child does, surrenders. You surrender in the fight. You realize that this relationship that you're in with God is like a mother to a child, but the mother doesn't always do everything the child wants, for if the mother did that, she'd raise a spoiled brat. She must make room for the child to mature. She must make room for the child to become all that the child can be. That brings us to a very difficult challenge in our culture, because for the most part, when we think of God, we think of a personal wish fulfiller, our bellhop, our heavenly slot machine. Whenever anything's wrong, we can pray and there should be a good and easy outcome. And yet what we find is God, in seeking to make us people of faith, hope, and love, is willing to wean us, to not allow us to know our instant gratification or to completely always be where we are able to find what we need immediately, but instead to cause us, like a weaned child, to recognize, well, I may not get everything I want from this being, but I find peace in their presence. The weaned child in its mother's arms, who has quieted itself, because even though it's not given what it wants from the mother, it can rest in the mother's care and provision, knowing that it's good. It's much along the lines of Augustine, who said to us in his prayer to God, "You have made us for yourself, O God, and our hearts are restless until we find rest in you." Here the psalmist has found rest in God, and found that rest after a difficult process of weaning. Now, if you want to put flesh on all of this, it's really easy to take this psalm and understand that there's more to this than maybe is on the surface, because Christ, being the fulfillment of the scriptures, actually is the fulfillment of this psalm. Christ himself had to be weaned. Christ himself is the one who perfectly embodies this lifestyle of humble dependence and quiet trust. Christ comes to the earth and he doesn't say, "I'm the greatest, I'm the best, I'm the brightest, I'm the biggest thing that's ever happened, people." Instead, he walks in humility, reaching to those on the outskirts. He humbles himself to serve others. He accepts his limitations. He enters into our world in such a way that he can only be in one place at one time, ministering to one person or a group of persons, so that he does all that we read our psalmist doing, the self-humbling of Christ that we understand in his incarnation, the accepting of limitations and emptying of himself. But he also goes through his weaning. That weaning of losing his comforts in the wilderness temptation, the agony in the garden, the suffering on the cross, all of those places are places where God's comforting provision is removed. So that he's hungry in the wilderness and he's lonely in the garden and he suffers on the cross. And indeed, it's on the cross that he loses his greatest sense of provision. "My God, why have you forsaken me?" And the very presence of God that he's come to rely upon deeply throughout his entire life is removed. That sense of knowing God's there. And yet, in spite of that, his last words on the cross, "I commit my spirit into your hands." Like a weaned child whose comforts have been removed, Christ still places himself upon the Father's lap. And so knowing that Christ is the fulfillment of all this, and knowing that he's about to enter into the worst of the suffering, the lonely garden and the suffering cross, it's interesting when we come to John 14 and Jesus in the upper room is sharing his peace, because again and again he wants his disciples to know trouble's brewing, violence is coming, oppression's about to happen, the world is such a way that it is going to attack me and attack me fiercely. But he says to them, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me." He speaks of the coming of the Spirit, and then in verse 27, he says, "Peace I leave with you." But it's not like the world gives. "My peace I give to you, not as the world gives. So don't let your hearts be troubled." And then at the very end of this upper room discourse, the last thing he says to remind us again of what he's trying to do to allow us to enter into his peace, he says, "I've said this to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation," is the Greek word. Persecution seems to be like we're being persecuted. It's really just you're going to have troubles in this world. "But take courage, I have overcome this world." Christ doesn't speak to us of a peace apart from conflict. He tells us about a peace in the midst of conflict, a peace that is different than what the world has to offer. Jacques Philippe says it this way: If we seek peace as the world gives it, if we expect peace in accordance with the reasoning of the world, because everything's going well, because we aren't experiencing any annoyances, and our desires are completely satisfied, etc., then it is certain that we will never know peace, or that our peace will be extremely fragile and of short duration. The peace Christ is offering is different. So this psalm and Jesus' words tell us there is a way of peace. What Lenin so desperately desired is possible, although you don't have to give up everything, you have to give up some things. And we've already seen some of the things we must give up. We must renounce pride, we must accept our limitations, we must surrender to God's care. All of those have to do with us growing in peace with others, with ourselves, with God. So that you may be thinking, well, where's the context? Where's our environment? Well, the challenge is, the circumstances haven't changed in any of these scenarios we've looked at. The circumstances can't change until these things are realities for all of us. Because let's face it, a world full of people who believe they're the greatest and can do no wrong because they know it all is a hell on earth. And that indeed is the world we're confronted with. A world with people who really do think they are the greatest. They are above any kind of reproach. That they can do no wrong. That they have all the answers. Makes for a very, very troubled environment. Maybe that's why Jesus, when he offers us the Beatitudes, says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit," before he ever says, "Blessed are the peacemakers." In order to truly be a peacemaker, one must first know humility and accept limitations in order to truly surrender to God and become the peacemaker that God desires us to be. Well, getting rid of some of these things may take a while, but the joy in letting them go all springs from this. And I close with this. Jacques Philippe, in his wonderful book, Finding Peace, says, if we could, with a single interior glance, see all the goodness and mercy that exist in God's designs for each of us, even in what we call disgraces, pains and afflictions, our happiness would consist in throwing ourselves into the arms of the divine will with the abandon of a young child that throws himself into the arms of his mother. And if we could know that, and if we could do that, in that one act, we would find peace. And perhaps through that act, we would become peacemakers and know God's blessing. Well, before I offer my pastoral prayer, I'd like you to turn back to your prayer of confession. And I'd like us to do two prayers together before my pastoral prayer. One is I'd like us to pray this prayer of confession once more. And then I'm going to invite us to pray Niebuhr's prayer of serenity. So if you join me, God of peace, caught up in the frantic demands of the day, we lose sight of what really matters. We exaggerate our importance. We think everything depends on us. We ignore your sacred rhythm of work and rest. We forget that we are not machines, and we lose our humanity in the process. Caught up in doing, we lose touch of being. Of being human, being your child, just being in your presence. For this short time, would you help us to find a moment of peace, God? Would you help us to turn off our wrestling and our struggle and help us to simply be? We'll pick up our wrestling again, but just for a bit, help us to breathe, help us to be. And help us to know the kind of peace that Niebuhr guides us in his prayer. Pray along with me. God, give me grace to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, courage to change the things which should be changed, and the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as Jesus did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it. Trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen.